Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Captain Hunter's Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about autism awareness. As police officers, we're called to different scenes, and sometimes those scenes contain obviously different people. And if we're not careful, if we're not cautious, then we can end up exacerbating the problem. We can end up making the problem worse. And so our goal is to make sure that everyone goes home safe, everyone ends up safe and sound. Our goal is to make sure that we treat everyone with equity and fairness and justice. And so many times officers have encountered people who have been on the spectrum as far as having some type of a difficulty in their learning, in their comprehension, in their social skills. And now we know that this difficulty is called autism. And I'm going to leave it to my guest to talk about autism and what it is and what it entails in just a moment. So I just want to bring that to everyone's attention. And if you're a police officer, please make sure you tune into this. And so see what you can do and do better. If you're a family member of someone who has autism or a parent of someone who has autism, please pay attention to my special guest for today and just take some ideas. And don't be afraid to reach out to her for some of your own ideas in whatever community that you're in. Now, we focus obviously here in Waterbury and in Connecticut, but if you're listening to this and you live in California or Arizona or New York or wherever you are, just take the ideas. That's the purpose of this. And I'm not trying to make this a local podcast. I want it to be a worldwide podcast. Certainly at least the United States. So if you're listening somewhere else, take these ideas, listen to what we're doing and listen to these ideas. And if you got better ideas, don't be afraid to shoot those ideas to me or to any guest that I have on. So please make sure that you're doing all that. So before we get into the interview, I just want to remind you all to hit that subscribe button, whatever platform you're listening to this podcast on, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Breaker, TuneIn, whatever you're listening to it on. Please make sure that you hit that subscribe button. Make sure you rate it high, right? So it can be easier to find. Make sure my analytics and the algorithms and all that kind of stuff, make sure it goes up high. So subscribe, rate it, and then share it. Share it in your email, share it in Facebook, share it on Twitter, whatever social media platform you're doing on, make sure this information is getting out there. So please subscribe, rate, and share. Remember, you can help support the podcast through Venmo, through Cash App, CPTL Hunter for both of those, PayPal, Lawrence Hunter /CPTL Hunter. That's Captain L Hunter. And also, I have a Patreon page, Captain Hunter's Podcast on Patreon. So let's talk a little bit about autism awareness with Helen Taylor. A little bit about Helen Taylor. Helen Taylor is married to Alan Taylor. They've been married for 26 years and have two beautiful children. She resides in Waterbury, Connecticut. She earned her master's degree in business administration from Post University. She volunteers for various activities and currently chairs the Employee Recreation Committee and on the Multicultural Business Resource Group. Helen, along with her husband, founded the Western Connecticut Awesome Speaks Walk in 2010 and served as walk chairs for 4 years. The walk has raised over $1 million for the organization. The Taylors also captained Team Chase and Friends at the walk and has raised over $100,000 in the past 13 years. Helen volunteers as a board president of the Connecticut Families for Effective Autism Treatment. That's CTFEACT, CTFEAT, F-E-A-T, FEAT. And is a board member of the Focus Center of Autism. Since 2015, Helen volunteers as a certified trainer for the State of Connecticut Regional Police Department for Autism Safety and Awareness. She is also a coach for Waterbury PAL, that's the Police Activity League, Special Olympics in basketball, softball, track and field, and volleyball for over 10 years. She has volunteered as an organizer with the Urban After School Program called Granville Academy of Waterbury and is currently their grant writer. Helen also organized two successful free all-day autism education and awareness forums in 2016 and 2018 in Waterbury, along with Autism Speaks for the Community. Helen is an Autism Speaks volunteer ambassador to discuss important bills with congressional representatives. Helen currently has started the Social Chase program for late teens to adults with autism and special needs. She has collaborated with Autism Speaks and Post University for social game nights at Post University, cooking classes at a local restaurant, and bowling at a local bowling alley. The Social Chase was started due to the lack of programs for individuals and is a parent-run organization. Helen's passion for equality inspired Autism Speaks to reach the urban market. The president listened and implemented MABE, National PSA campaign in 2013. Autism Speaks also implemented more diversity in their marketing materials. She has also appeared on the local news affiliates, including Fox 61 News, NBC 30, WTNH, which is an ABC affiliate. So without further ado, here's my special guest, Helen Taylor. Welcome to the program, Ms. Helen Taylor. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. So I was reading through your bio and done some really impressive things. But before we get into your bio, why don't you explain to the audience what autism is and what it means to be on the spectrum?
It's called autism spectrum disorder. That's the full name. It is a group of complex developmental brain disorders. It's caused by a combination of genetic and environmental factors. So some of the characterizations of individuals on the spectrum is communication difficulties, social challenges, and repetitive behaviors. And so that's just the overall understanding of what autism is at a high level.
And there's different levels to it, I would assume. That's why there's a people talk about being on the spectrum.
It's a full spectrum. So there's different conversations going on now on how it should be identified, because you have classic autism, then they say there's Asperger's, but there's a whole bunch of discussions about that, changing some of those titles. But right now, it's 1 in 59 individuals who are impacted by autism. And so there are some individuals who are, we call severe autism. They have trouble communication, or they're considered nonverbal. They may have some emotional behavioral issues that go along with it because they cannot communicate. And so it makes it a little bit difficult for parents in terms of having their child out in the public, because they may react a certain way because they can't communicate. You have moderate individuals, so sometimes people can't say, don't look at you and say, oh, I can't tell they have autism, but they still have the social challenges. They can't communicate with their peers. They can't drive. They can't really have a job independently. And then you have the what's called the higher end of autism, or the Asperger syndrome, and that is more so individuals who still have social challenges, but some of them are able to go ahead and have a job and drive and have a family, but still have challenges with understanding social cues and interacting with others, peers who are typical. It's a full range. So they always say, if you see one person with autism, you see one person with autism. You really can't peg what it really is for one individual.
And now you said it was based on environmental and biological factors. Is that right?
Correct. So there are studies still going on. So they don't know exactly what 100% causes it yet. They're still doing research. Autism Speaks is doing research. Yale's doing this research. So they are still trying to figure out where it's from. But some of the things they have been identifying in terms of environmental, like maybe things that are in our food now, which that hasn't been proven. I don't really want to say that in public yet. I'm not a scientist.
I got you. Yeah, I got you.
You know, and genetics. So they're looking at genetics of the adults, of the fathers mostly, to see if there is some type of DNA factors that could cause it. So it's still not identified fully what causes it.
People have been saying that in comparison to the 1960s and 70s, there's much higher rate of autism today. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. So back in the 60s, like 1 in 5,000 were identified with autism. Now it's 1 in 59. So that's a big jump. And people are asking, well, what's the difference? Is it because people are more knowledgeable? Is there more factors? It's a combination. Because if you think about when I was back in school, you could kind of identify that person who's a little bit different than who you were. And it wasn't that many. Now it's more of individuals on the spectrum who have special needs, now more so than when I went to school. So you can't just say it's just because we're more knowledgeable. There's some other factors involved, and that's why they're saying it's environmental factors.
And, of course, the conspiracy theorists will point to these vaccines that we're getting. Do you believe in any of that, or?
This is the way I put it. Autism Speaks' position is that vaccinations had nothing to do with autism. So that's Autism Speaks' position. I, as a parent, have seen parents who have taken a video of their child, happy, smiling, laughing, and after they had immunization, they were lost. So my position has always been, I can't tell that parent that nothing happened to their child.
Oh, my God.
So,
wow.
You know, I personally can't say that to a parent. And I know that that's the position of most people, that immunizations have nothing. It's been proven. There's no science for it. I'm open-minded about it. I'll put it that way.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's an honest answer. Thank you. So you yourself, as you mentioned, are a parent of an autistic child. Can you talk about the challenges of that as far, and he's older now and he's going to college. I'd like to get to that in a second, but can you talk about the challenges as far as growing up?
Well, with Chase, he didn't really speak a lot in the beginning, but we didn't know what autism was at all. We had no clue. And so, you know, every kid's down telling us, don't compare him to his older brother. And I'm like, there's something different. And so when I went to the doctor, Chaudhry, she said, you might want to look at birth to three. I had no clue what that meant. So we finally got birth to three engaged. And we were worried about him being labeled. That's one of the challenges of us as parents. We don't want our child labeled, because once they're labeled, that's it. And we had to get past that, because it's more important to help your child than versus a label, because a label you can always peel off is no longer true. And that's why I try to activate a parent. So Chase's challenges was social, speaking, understanding feelings, understanding expressions on people's faces. So he went to the Bucks Hill Annex School. He was accepted into Dr. Galloway's program, the IPP program, which made a huge difference for him. And so it's what they used, therapy to help him understand social cues, behaviors, what to say, when a person frowns, what that means. So those are our challenges with him. But now he's 19 and our challenges are still social and understanding the world around him and his innocence. There's a lot of individuals on the spectrum are very innocent to the world. So that's one of our parents, as parents, we fear, because they are so innocent. We're worried that somebody will take advantage of them. So Chase does not have like a friend that he calls or hangs out with. He likes his world and he's happy there. And so our challenge is to try to get him to understand how to live in the world, and also to have the world accept our children for who they are.
Yeah, that is.
So he goes to college, yeah, but he goes to college with a mentor that he gets assistance with, because he's smart. He's a National Honor Society member.
Okay.
But he still independently cannot take a bus to go to school, a city bus to go to school. He still independently can't get in to drive a car. He still independently, you know, doesn't know how to do certain things to register for classes and understand the windows. Those are all challenges for us.
Okay. Oh, well, I'm glad that he's going to school and doing well, the National Honor Society. Wow, that's really impressive. Yeah. Now, will he, and I'm asking this for a lot of people's benefit, will he or other people similarly placed on the spectrum, will he ever be able to live independently or drive a car or whatever?
I hope so. I don't try to put things that he'll never do that, because that takes away my hope, right? So I hope so, and so that's the challenge. And there are individuals who that would never happen, and it's true. It never happened. And he may be one of those individuals, but I don't know that yet. The challenge also is that a lot of individuals on the spectrum who are smart, who go to school and graduate, they can't get a job because they have the social challenges of not understanding, you know, social cues from their employer, from their coworkers, and they may not even interview well because they may not look at their employer. They may look off to the side. So even though they're brilliant and they could definitely work, here we go with society accepting them and giving them a chance to show that they could do a job.
Right, right. Some people have on the back of their cars that puzzle piece in autism. What does that puzzle piece represent?
So the puzzle piece, the blue one represents Autism Speaks, and we're just trying to find, there's a puzzle of autism. Like, we don't know what it is, right? So we're trying to find the missing piece of our loved ones and on the spectrum.
And that would be that where it comes from as far as the biological or genetic or environmental? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, so it's like, we don't know autism, like, why, right? So
okay.
It's a puzzle. So we're trying to figure out why and how we could live with it. So it's all a puzzle to us. We're learning and trying to figure things out.
Okay.
That's my
As far as their cognitive ability, is Chase and other people similarly placed on the spectrum able to understand that they have some difficulties, or is everything just fine in their world?
It depends on, I guess everyone's different. So it depends. Some individuals know that they are different. Some individuals don't care that they're different. They're proud that they're different because there's nothing wrong with it. And some don't know. I think that, you know, in my experience, I can't speak for every parent, so I don't want to get any phone calls. I think that what happens with individuals on the spectrum is that when you see the child, they seem to be in the world and be happy. But we as parents know what they need to do to survive. And that's where the challenge comes in. Because if the world accepted our children for the way they were and they could live happily, I think many of us would be okay with that. But that's not the way the world is.
Yeah.
So there are some individuals who do not know they have autism. There's some individuals who don't know they have autism until they're in their 40s. And they said, I wish I knew earlier, because that explains a lot of things why I had so many challenges growing up. It's such a variant in terms of how each person deals with it. Chase is fine with it, and some individuals hide it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then there's parents who have children who are in their 20s who are still in diapers.
Really? Wow. Wow.
Because this is some of the challenge of, so everybody looks at like the good doctor, you know, the high function who do all those things, who could speak. There's such a spectrum. There's individuals who might still wear diapers, like I said, who can't communicate, who have, because they can't communicate, they may yell and scream because they may be stimming or need to bounce around. It's all that involved for individuals on the spectrum. And so it impacts the family, impacts the siblings as well, because they have to live with that different type of sibling and who they love, but it's this different life for them. And some parents won't even go out in public with their child because they may worry they may take off or run in the street, because individuals on the spectrum tend to wander and tend to run. And so it's all that involved. So Chase used to be one of those children who used to take off. And, you know, we were very fortunate to have our nieces and his cousins always make sure they had an eye on him to grab him. So it's a lot involved with it.
Yeah. So it's good that he had cousins and things like that to help out. Now, how was Chad? I mean, you said it takes a lot on him. How was Chad? Was Chad a good big brother, or was he?
He's a good big brother. I mean, there is things that Chad could have a conversation with Chase and he'll understand. So he's always been a loving brother. We always try to make sure that we didn't treat them any differently.
Right.
Because we didn't want him to have any extra responsibility because he had a brother on the spectrum, because it's not fair to him. And so I think that made a difference. But there's times where there's a time that Special Olympics wanted Chase to do a commercial for them, and Chase was like, oh, I don't know, because he's not comfortable that way. And I told Chad, please go talk to your brother. And next thing you know, Chase is going to do the commercial.
Well, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And Chase has also written a book, right? Is that, he wrote a book?
What we did with Chase is that, in my thinking, is that everybody has a niche, whether they're special needs or not. There's something that they could be very good at. And so Chase liked to draw. He always loved letters. And so instead of us always trying to pull him out of his world into our world, we went into his world, which is letters and critters. And, you know, he loves cartoons still. He still loves Blue's Clues, which drives me crazy, but he still loves Blue's Clues.
Is that still on? So, oh, my God.
Yeah. He watches it on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
That's what happens. I catch him watching on YouTube. He's driving me crazy. So we went to his world. And so my thinking a long time ago was he liked a lot of these immature things. He liked to draw. And like, well, maybe one day you could be a children's book author, because I don't know what's going to happen in his future. I don't know if he's going to be able to work or anybody's going to hire him. I don't know. So he started showing me the characters. I was like, well, are you ready to write a book now? And he's like, sure. I said, well, here's the software. Write your book. So he wrote two ABC books. The first is called The Letter Critters. First, it introduces the critters from A to Z. And the next book was Biographies, which gives you more information about his critters, about Critter Town. And so he's very proud of his books. They're both self-published on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble. He has a website, thelettercritters.com, where he has some free facts on there, as well as some words you can spell with his. He also created some trading cards, ABC cards. So he has 300 words on his website he put on there that you could spell with his trading cards. And he's writing his third book right now.
Awesome. When can we expect that release for his third book? Does he have a date?
When his mother gets her act together.
Well, you tell him I said to tell him to get his mother's act together.
Yeah. We self-published both the first two books. I was looking for a publisher for his third book. So, you know, I work full-time, so I'm trying to fit that into the rest of my life. And also, he wants his critters to become a television series, animated series. So I'm trying to work on that a little bit as well, you know, still while working full-time and volunteering. I'm fitting it in, Lawrence.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay, good. Well, just keep us updated on when all this information will drop. You talked about challenges about people with autism running away. And so that brings us to the more the police aspect of it. So you worked with the Waterbury Police Department. I was there, obviously, when you worked with us. And you started off in our training academy. So just talk to us about how you came in and trained our officers.
Yeah, I was very fortunate. I had, at the time, it was Chief Riddick was the chief at the time. And I approached him about wanting to inform officers about individuals on the spectrum and how when they encounter them, it's going to be different than when they encounter somebody else. And so he first had me start off with the roll call. And then the regional training came about, and he invited me to do that as well. And so this was very a proud moment for me because it's not only beneficial to our children who are on a spectrum who may encounter a police officer, but it's also beneficial to an officer because it's not fair. They don't know, right? They don't know if an individual is on a spectrum. So I try to give them certain things, like they may not make eye contact with you. They may take off when they see you because they're afraid and they may run into danger. And just they may repeat everything you say, so don't take it personal. They may laugh at you. Don't take it personal because some of it's considered stimming. So I try to give them some of the things that they have with their social interaction and how individuals on the spectrum, they interpret language literally. So I try to give them examples of don't use too many words. Just use one or two words for them to understand and take your time because individuals on the spectrum take time to process what you're saying. So if you're going too fast, they're going to miss a lot and not understand you. And a lot of them will not make eye contact with you. So don't try to force it. That's just their way. And just keep going on with what you're doing and try to understand. So, and I just try to tell them about the sensory, how a lot of individuals on the spectrum have sensory challenges. So the sirens will be a problem for them. The lights will be a problem for them. So they're acting a certain way. If you're at a situation, if you could turn your lights off and turn off your sirens, that'll be very beneficial. I also try to explain to them that if they're encountering an individual, to try to like keep them in a safe corner because they may run off and take off right into the road because many of them have no sense of danger. That was one of our challenges with Chase in the younger years. He had no sense of danger. So we always had to keep an eye on him in a sense because he would definitely run right out into the road and not think anything about it.
Wow. Wow. You mentioned stemming. What is that?
So stemming is, it's done in many ways for individuals. So some might have a little thing in their hand that like a comfort for them. It helps them feel good and it's like almost like a communication to them as well. And it could be them flapping their hands, spinning around. It could be them rocking back and forth. Those are some examples of it. So if an officer encounters, and I tell them, if you encounter an individual who happens to be flapping or bouncing around or rocking back and forth, don't stop them. Let them continue to do that because there's nothing they can do to help them with that. Let them continue to go through that because they need that. That comforts them. So it's like if I take something away from you that comforts you, you're not going to like it.
Right.
That's the reaction you would get from a person on the spectrum as well.
Is that where those spinners that were in fashion about a year ago came from? Is that those spinners?
No, those are for ADD, for people to focus.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
I mean, people on the spectrum can use them as well, but that mostly came for focusing.
Oh, okay. Now, also, I remember when we were in a class, we talked about water and the danger with that. A lot of autism kids go near water. Yeah.
Right. So, drowning is... So, 42% of cases with children who wander end up in death. That's really high. And that's for children under the age of 9.
Wow.
And so, accidental drowning accounts for 91% of those deaths reported. For some reason, individuals on the spectrum like shiny things. They like water. So, whether regardless of their age, so they would definitely walk straight into water and drown.
Wow.
Whether it's freezing cold out or not, they will walk right into water.
Wow.
And so that's some of the things that, you know, we try to convey to the, I try to convey to police officers, if there are any water bodies around, search that first. I guess Sylvia, I said, I don't care if it's a cup of water, with the bathtub, search it. Just some years ago, I shared with them as well in New Britain, there's a little boy who went out the front door. They're frantically looking for him. And a police officer knew he went down the backs of the yard and looked at every pool and found him and saved him.
Wow.
From drowning.
Now, did that officer do that because he knew he was on a spectrum? Or he had your training, essentially?
I can't explain that to you because I read it in an article on the news. So okay. There wasn't that detail in it, but he knew whether he was trained or had somebody in his family. He knew, because that's something everybody doesn't know, that you have to check water. They love trains. So they can love trains so much. They'll stand in front of a train, look right at it on the track, let it come towards them.
Oh my God. Wow.
Because that sense of danger is not always there. It's just they have a paradigm of what they like and that's it. And they don't know anything else around them.
Mm. You trained with the Waterbury Police Department. Do you train any other police departments, or do you know if any other police departments have similar training as to what you do?
I do train. Whoever asked me to go, I do go. There. I went to Cheshire before, and I've been to West Hartford. And they're in Connecticut, I'm sure there are other ones. I'm just not aware of them, but I know some other organizations that offer the training as well. I do my training is on a volunteer basis because it's just more important for me to educate versus, you know, trying to make some money from it. It's more about spreading the word. There are more thorough training that I think officers should get in terms of how you react when you encounter a person. How do you hold them? There's like a big series of training out there that I think is very beneficial.
So it is out there, or you?
There's training out there. It's just, okay. I'm not sure which police departments are doing it.
Okay, very good, very good. I can remember one time when I was at the mall, and I always felt bad about this. I mean, this is a story I don't tell very often, but I always felt bad about this. I'm working extra duty at the mall. That means I'm working an extra assignment at the at the mall. So it's the end of the night, and there's this kid there who is security is dealing with this kid. And he's not talking. So I go up to him and I start having a conversation with him. He's not responding. He's not looking him in the eye. He's looking the other way and he's not talking back. I'm asking him questions and he's not answering them. So I'm starting to get louder and more angrier and more frustrated until a friend of his comes up and says, oh, you know, he's special. Now that's just a term he used. He's special. He don't really talk. When the other kid came up to him, then the kid I was talking to gave him a hug and everything like that. You know, he reached out and gave him a hug because I would assume that he saw him as a friendly face. And here are these, we got a police officer. I don't even know if he could identify me as a police officer and security guards who are obviously wearing uniforms themselves. And so he sees a friendly face and goes up to him and gives him a hug. So I always felt bad about that. And I didn't, and at that time I didn't have your training. I wasn't aware and I always felt bad. You know, this really could have gone wrong had I overreacted. And I was already getting frustrated. You know, I thought this was just some punk kid who was just not, you know, being defiant and, you know, until somebody else comes up to me and identifies that this kid is special, you know, then I calm down. So I appreciate all that you're doing and trying to get this information out to the police officers and everything like that.
Well, I appreciate that. That means a lot because it is, it's about education like anything else. The more we're aware, the more we can do better things. Right. And so that's why it's important for me to try to convey to officers that don't take it personal. I mean, I coach Special Olympics every week. I deal with special needs individuals, and sometimes I have to make sure I don't take it personal when they're not reacting to me the way I think they should react. And I have to step back my own self. So I completely understand that, but it's important for us to have that education to know how to handle it and what to do in those situations.
Right, exactly. So when I was there, you and I had set up a registration day for the police department, and that registration day consisted of making sure that if a child or a person who was on the spectrum was registered with the police department, so if there was a call at someone's address, or hopefully even by now a person's name, it would register, and that would send off some type of alarm system to the police department, say, okay, this person is on the spectrum, this person has autism, and here are the possible flight risks or problems that they may be faced with. I certainly appreciate you for doing that. You want to talk a little bit more about that?
Again, another thing I'm very proud of. I'm very proud of the city of Waterbury, the police department. They've been so supportive of us, even when we have our walk. So I went to the chief at the time and spoke to him how the importance of it is, because individuals tend to wander, or a parent may call an officer to her home because she's having a challenge with her child, and they may not know how to react to them or what to expect. So it's twofold. It helps the officer when they're called. They can now type their person's name in. If they submitted a picture, they can see a picture, but they also know what the challenges are for that individual. So they're educated before they go and encounter that individual. So the registry is voluntary. It's available on the police department, Waterbury Police Department's website. It says vulnerable citizens, because it includes not only individuals on the spectrum. It could be somebody who has Alzheimer's or special needs, somebody who wanders or who would have a possibility of encountering the police department that will help them to deal with the challenges of that individual. So with this registration, when I went to a training, I was doing a training afterwards, after the registration, the officer said it did come in handy for him because he was called, he read about the individual, and he knew how to interact with that parent as well as that individual. So it's important, because if you go to a situation at home, and this has happened, I'm not saying it happened in Connecticut, where they encountered an individual, a lot of our individuals, some of them are very big men, they might think it's a threat to them, but not realizing that they don't understand who you are as a police officer, because that doesn't mean anything to them, because they don't always understand it. And it depends on how they're taught what a police officer is, because they may not know you're there to protect and serve us. They may think of something differently. And he had a knife in his hand. He wouldn't drop it because he's on the spectrum. He's not going to drop it. And they shot him.
Oh, man.
If they understood that he was on a spectrum, they might have handled it a little bit differently.
Yeah, so therefore we see how important this training is. You know, backing off, de-escalation, and all that kind of stuff really becomes important.
Yeah.
You helped with the bill that was just passed by Congress.
Oh, the Autism CARES Act.
Yes, yeah, Autism CARES Act. Yes.
Yeah, so I am a volunteer, again, with Autism Speaks, as a volunteer ambassador. And so we talked to legislators about certain bills to get them on and have them. There's also called Autism Caucus in Congress that I asked Representative Congresswoman Johanna Hayes to join, and she did without a blink of an eye, which I'm very proud to say, especially she's from Waterbury. And so the Autism Care Act was passed. It was a huge thing. It was nonpartisan, and it was going to expire. If it would have expired, it would have took a lot of services away from individuals on the spectrum. There wouldn't be any research on it. There wouldn't be any more research funded for autism, for appropriate interventions for people at all levels. It was going to be seriously jeopardized to support families, as well as the services to provide individuals on the spectrum. So it was just a huge feat for us. Many of us, it wasn't just me, many of us are ambassadors, and other organizations was constantly calling Congress and sharing our stories to convey the importance of this act. And it was passed. Right now we're waiting for the president, hopefully he'll sign it.
It's very troubling to me that some of these bills or some of these laws will expire. So this is the CARES Act of 2019. So, and what I was reading about it, this funding you're talking about will expire at some point. So, in a few years, it may not get that funding. So research won't be able to be done. Am I understanding this right?
Right. So government won't be able to support the research that's going on for autism, for family services. So there's a lot of, we have like a lot of family services in Connecticut. And they get funding from the state, and the funding, they get the money from the federal government. And so a lot of these individuals with special needs and spectrum won't have the housing, won't have the support systems, and then what happens with them?
Right.
So a lot of them, some individuals who don't have support systems end up on the street. And what we have now we have a person who has communication challenges, doesn't understand boundaries, and what's going to happen. And most of them will encounter police. You know, or they might go into go to jail or in a facility, and then what? They're not going to know how to handle things. I mean, people with autism are 7 times more likely to encounter law enforcement. So imagine if we didn't have any of these services provided. That would definitely increase, not only for individuals on the spectrum, but also for people with special needs.
Yeah, yeah. When we talk about equality and justice and the probability that people will encounter the police, as you said, people with autism are 7 times more likely, right? I'm reading from your bio again, and it says, at the end of it, it says, Helen's passion for equality inspired Autism Speaks, which is the name of an organization, to reach the urban market. The president listened and implemented the Maybe National PSA campaign in 2013. So what is this Maybe National campaign?
I've been volunteering for Autism Speaks for over 13 years. And one of the things, I'm going to be very honest, in the beginning, they were not very diverse. I went to their website. When I first started off, I didn't see any person of color on the website. So I made a phone call to them and expressed my concerns for that. So over the years, it's been my goal to ensure that they are being diverse. And I went to one of the events in Chicago. And I was like, there's like 400 of us in there, and I'm looking around the room, and I'm only seeing 4 of us of color in there. And so I expressed my concern with the president at the time, and I also said that they needed to start some type of urban toolkit, because people on the spectrum who are of color are not being identified early, and they're being labeled as being bad or behavioral problems, versus give them the services for them that they need.
Exactly, yes.
So early intervention is key with individuals on the spectrum, and these kids are not getting it. And so, therefore, some of them get kicked out of preschool, out of kindergarten, which is ridiculous to me.
Right.
And so that was my voice. I used my little voice to help a national organization to put a campaign out there. And they started this campaign. I personally think it could have been better, but it was a start. And even now, over the years, I continuously talk to them about, I see literature, I don't see people of color, I email the president saying, what's going on? They know me now. So they have over the years, have really, I've seen some changes in their literature, on their website, the walk literature. Last year, I received a poster, and it was not diverse. I told them I'm not using it. And I need one that's diverse, and they sent one that's diverse, because it's not just about one color.
Right.
It's
right.
About all of us. And
right.
To me, I don't want all African Americans in the photo. I don't want all Latinos or all white. It's all of us. All of us matter in terms of living in this world of autism. So that's what's important to me, that people see all of us, even people who are in wheelchairs should be in the picture. Because some of them can't walk.
Well, thank you for doing that. And thank you so much for speaking up, because I think that that is important. And number one, it puts it in the minds of the people who are viewing the pictures that this kid can have it, whether he's Black or Latino or Asian or white or whatever. You know, when police officers see this kind of stuff, as you mentioned, these kids are being kicked out of preschool and all this kind of stuff. So we talk about all this equality, school to prison pipeline. And if these kids are not being identified, then this is how they get put into the system. If they're not identified, then they'll never, then when they do come in contact with the police, that police officer may have an overreaction. As you said before, these kids are sometimes large and they don't know how to react. So it needs to be in the officer's mind. It needs to be in the teacher's mind. It needs to be in all society's minds that autism hits all flavors of humanity. So thank you for speaking up about that. So
thank you. And just to give Connecticut kudos, because it's not just Warby Regional. During my training, I've gotten such great response from the officers. They've come to me afterwards, asked me questions. I even had an officer come at the end and gave me a hug. That's just priceless to me.
Yes.
So they want to learn. They want to do the best. And I give them great kudos for that. And I really appreciate that I was able to provide that training.
Very nice. So you work with the Urban School Program, the Granville Academy of Waterbury, as their grant writer.
Our son, Chad, used to be part of Granville. So I used to volunteer with them every week, and then he grew out of it, but I stayed on. And so I write grants for them because it's such a great after-school program. It's helping urban youth to see something outside the city. So they, when I was there, I brought in people from my company, from Eversource, who are engineers. So we did some type of engineering projects with them, hands-on projects. We brought them to Eversource to see different types of careers they could have besides basketball. And one of the proud moments I had was when we were getting feedback from the individuals, when we brought to them to the National Science of Black Engineers down south somewhere, they saw all these engineers of color, and they're like, wow. So many kids said in their writing, I used to want to be a professional basketball player, but now I want to be an engineer.
Awesome. Awesome.
So Granville provides after-school program for individuals to have them, give them exposure. So a lot of kids in the urban area don't have exposure. They don't see other things outside of the city. They provide us to them, and they bring them to college tours, so they see something different than what they see every day. So I still support them in terms of writing grants for them because it's a great program.
Sounds like it. That's awesome. That's good. We need more people to be doctors and engineers and lawyers. You know, we all know that a very small minority of people are going to make it to the pro levels or become rap right. stars. So we got to focus on something else.
Something else, right.
So I'll give you a moment to just kind of promote what you have going on. I know Chase has got a book. You can promote that. And do you have any literature? Let me end off with that. Do you have any literature that where people can email you or any websites that people can go to, be it a teacher who's listening, be it a police officer who's listening, where they can go and just learn a little bit more about this?
Sure. So in terms of literature, again, Autism Speaks has one of the reasons. So for people who don't know, my husband and I, we started the Autism Speaks Walk here in Waterbury. It's called the Western Connecticut Walk 10 years ago. And it's a fundraising walk. It's also a family event. And so far from the 10 years, we raised over $1 million for Autism Speaks. We do that because they also offer what's called free toolkits. On Autism Speaks website, under Family Services, there are free toolkits on how to, for parents, when you first find out if your child has autism, it's a 100-day toolkit. What do you do the first 100 days? This for your dentist, how to deal with a dentist, how to get your hair cut, for grandparents, for the school system, just behavior toolkits, all free to download. Very informative, and it's even a toolkit for schools. So I highly recommend you go to autismspeaks.org, Family Services, and look at all those free toolkits that are out there. As well as they also have an 800 number you could call to get more information if you have any questions for anybody. Even for the wandering, like what do you do for wandering and what steps you should take. So there's quite a bit of information out there. In terms of local, just local programs as well, there's ASRC that's in Wallingford area. They're a great resource to call. There's Focus Center of Autism in the Canton area. And in terms of our walk, is happening next year I think it's June 6th of 2020. This year it's being moved to Kwasa Park because the City of Waterbury is working on the park. So the registration is now available. You could go to autismspeakswalk.org and just type in 06704, the zip code, and it will pop up our Western Connecticut walk. You could start that as well. Also, in April, for people to know, it's Autism Awareness Month, and we call it Light Up Blue, so people wear blue or light bulbs, and it's just a time of, like, a pride month, in a sense, for people on a spectrum, and we just spread more awareness. So most of the literature you definitely could find is on Autism Speaks. They could email me if you want to get more information. They could email me at, it's kind of long, Greater Waterbury Autism. So greaterwaterburyautism@gmail.com. They can email me there, and I can provide them some guidance with that. And I can also give them some ideas of who we have, like connectivectc.org as a discussion email, which is very helpful for parents and individuals because it's parents helping each other out. So you can put a question out there, and all that knowledge will be shared with you to help you, and it's in a private email list. And I'm also the board president on that as well. But it's just, it's, lot of information out there. A lot of us are always willing to help each other out because we know what it entails.
Very nice. So we will be looking forward to all that you have going on. We're looking forward to Chase's book. Please make sure that you guys pick that up. What are the names of his books again for those out there? Can you?
Oh, sure. So the best way is if you go to www.thecritters.com. On there, you'll see his website, and we have links to where you can purchase his books at. He's very proud of his books. We do donate proceeds to autism organizations for his book. Also, I did want to mention one more thing. I do have what's called the Social Chase program I started last year. It's not a nonprofit program. It's just being run by me and some other parents. And what's happened, we found an issue that a lot of kids, once they're out of school, there's nothing for them. There's no activities or anything for them in this area. So I said, you know what, I'm just going to put something together. And so I collaborated with Autism Speaks in Post University, and we have like board game nights there. And we also have cooking classes. Like today, we have a cooking class at the RDM. So I'm collaborating with RDM. And it's for late teens to adults, young adults, not too old, just to give them some activities. We do bowling at Wilkins Lanes. Wilkins Lanes has been wonderful working with our individuals on the spectrum, and I'm going to continue that during the fall. And if you're interested in it, you could go to facebook.com/groups/the Social Chase, and you could ask to be a member. It's a private group, so you have to answer a questionnaire to make sure it's the right group for you.
Gotcha. And thank you for promoting all that, and thank you for doing everything that you're doing for the community. That was the, or T-H-E, or just D letter critters?
The article, theletter critters.com.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Helen Taylor, for being on the podcast. Well, thank you for all you're doing. All right.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Okay. We'll talk to you again. Take care. And tell DJ Taylor I said hi. So
I will tell him I said hello. HDJansProductions.com. I'll put that there.
Yes, yes. Say it again so everybody's got it.
I'll make it simple. ACTJams.com.
ACTJams.com. You got a wedding or something like that coming up? Make sure you call this brother. He'll help you out.
Yeah, and he has a radio show on every week on the New York Smooth Jazz Radio, and you could go on the website, and he has free music you could listen to.
Okay, very nice, very nice, very good. Okay, thank you so much. Bye. Thank you so much to my special guest, Helen Taylor, for all that she has done with autism, her registration for the city of Waterbury to register those who are vulnerable citizens has been awesome. I helped with the implementation, just a little pat on my own back, but all the credit goes to them, and it was obviously and definitely a good cause. So make sure you check out that information that Ms. Taylor gave about her son's book. It will be in the show notes link. Make sure if you want that show notes that you hit that subscribe button on Patreon page. Not asking for much, just to help out. Also, Ms. Taylor can be reached on Facebook, Helen Taylor in Waterbury. Hit her up on Facebook. She did give out her email. So hit her up on the email. Make sure if you're living in another community, as I mentioned, don't be afraid to hit her up and ask her what she did as far as helping to get this information to her local police department. If you live in Indiana, for example, and your police department doesn't have any type of registration for their special vulnerable citizens, then reach out to Ms. Taylor and ask her how she went about that. And I'm sure that she will be able to help you with that. Like she said, it's not just for those with autism, but for those who have Alzheimer's and any other member of the special population. And to any officers out there, just be mindful of that, you know, the next time you encounter someone who's not speaking, who's not looking you in the eye, who refuses to put something down, just consider the fact that they may have some type of issue and they may be on the spectrum. Don't be afraid to de-escalate. There's no need to approach them. Look for other persons who may be standing by. Even check your missing persons database or you know, NCIC, whatever. Make sure you check all that out and see if this person is missing before we go hands-on. We have to look to other ulterior methods before we go hands-on and start shooting people, because they won't drop a knife or because they won't drop a baseball bat. So just think about that, particularly if they are presenting with some of the ideas and some of the behaviors that Ms. Taylor gave us in today's episode. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you guys learned something. Please reach out to Ms. Taylor. Please look for that training. Become involved. Ms. Taylor was not aware of certain situations until it happened to her own son. And so that is the way that it goes many times. We are not aware of situations until it happens to us. So as police officers, we have to become more educated about the world in which we live in. And the world in which we live in is not black and white. As the autism attempts to tell us, there's a spectrum of people who are living differently than us, and we have to understand that. And so that's the purpose of this podcast, is to get you all to understand that there's a spectrum of people out there, and we need to become open-minded about that and learn how to deal with them and learn how to de-escalate situations. So thank you once again to Ms. Taylor for being on the podcast and showing us the way. And as she mentioned, it's being received by other officers. It doesn't make you soft and weak because you're taking a slower approach into handling the situation. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Until next episode, much love and peace. Take care.